Someone You Should Know. A program about people you know, and even more that you don't. Hosted by Stuart Sachs, veteran, husband, father, and grandfather. Now, here's your host, Stuart Sachs.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Someone You Should Know. As always, thank you for taking the time to watch the show, whether you're watching it when it first airs on Wednesday mornings, or you just go back at your leisure and pick it up and watch it. I do thank you very, very much for watching. I also want to thank our producer, Christine Dean, who is always putting the show together every week. Thank you very, very much, Christine. She is the DFW Networking Diva, and you can check her out. And also, we are sponsored today by our good friend, Irving Chung. Now, Irving is with Fran Choice. What is Fran Choice? Fran Choice means franchise choice. This young man knows absolutely everything there is to know about franchising. So if you are thinking about maybe going into franchising, you would like to maybe supplement your full-time job with a part-time franchising gig, you need to reach out to Irving Chung at Fran Choice. He'll answer all your questions, no obligation, and all, but he's a fascinating guy, and there are some incredible franchises available out there. Well, today is going to be a colorful story because we're going to be talking with a young lady who has been an artist for more than 20 years. I was thinking about a catchphrase for my friend Carol, and I said she speaks softly and carries a big brush. So I want to welcome Carol McConnell to the show, who is a professional artist. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Stuart. I'm so glad to be here.
You are really an extremely interesting young lady because I have always been fascinated with art. And for the most part, I would say when people are looking for art, they're looking for, you know, just a basic 2-foot by 3-foot piece of art to put on the wall. You are, on the other hand, really think big because you do pieces that are 4-foot by 6-foot. Probably one of the first questions I would ask is, you know, other than, you know, when you walk into a bank building or the lobby of a hotel, very often you will see a very large, oversized piece of artwork. Do you find that more and more people are getting interested in larger pieces for larger walls in their homes?
Well, these days it's not unusual to have these volume ceilings, 2-story entryways. People are building big homes with grand spaces in them, and I love to fill them with big art. It's amazing sometimes how small these paintings look in rooms that size. A 48 by 60 looks like a postage stamp on a large wall with a, you know, with a 20-foot ceiling. So you really need to think of the scale of the wall when you're picking the size of the painting.
Well, and that adds another aspect to what you do is because somebody who does have that 3-story atrium type living room or family room, and they've got this large wall, they can't just walk into a gallery and say, I want to find a piece that's going to fit that wall. That means that they may reach out to you to commission you to do a specific piece. And you do commissioning. What part of your business is commissioned work?
I would say probably 20 to 30%. I work with art curators, I work with art galleries, I work with interior designers, and I work with homeowners to create the piece that they want for their home. So I love doing commissions. I say that I take all the worry out because I have 100% money back guarantee. If they don't love it, they don't buy it. It's hard to commission something when you don't know exactly what it's going to look like at the end. So I try to take that fear out of it.
And of course, with commissioning, then the client can say, you know, I favor blues and reds and maybe teal and all, and give you an idea of the color direction they want to go on. Does that often work for you, or do they invite you into the home and you look at the furniture, the colorations of the furniture, and the maybe the accent pillows and the rugs on the floor? Is that the way you kind of determine which direction to go?
Well, if they're here in town, I often visit. If they're out of town, they can send me pictures, and I have an app that I can drop a painting right into their room and show them what it would look like. But I've been known to paint my studio wall, the color of their wall, so they can see the painting on the color they choose. So I'm very accommodating. If they need red, purple, and teal, they get red, purple, and teal. So.
You know, and you mentioned, you know, if they're in town, you're located in Cincinnati, Ohio,
Yes.
and all, and so your clientele is it in a, you know, the local area basically, or do you draw from, you know, like a three-state area?
Well, really, I ship to the whole United States. So,
Wow.
yes, I try to keep the continental US in mind. So, yes, but I have shipped overseas as well. It's just a little more difficult, but it's very doable. Yeah, I work with people across the US. With art consultants, they can be in any city, and I can either ship them the paintings rolled up or already stretched on stretcher frames, and I have ways to ship to get them there in a reasonable time and at a reasonable price.
Well, the website is scrolling across the screen, folks, and I invite you to visit the website, because there's a lot of, not only is there a lot of fascinating information about Carol, what she does, but also just page after page after page of some of the most beautiful artwork that you've ever seen. And I should add, we're talking about these massive oversized, but you also do things 12 by 12, and do it in smaller formats too, and in groups. You've been doing this for quite a while. Is this something that you feel, I always hate to use the word, were you born with this talent, or was this a talent that you started as a young girl and just developed over the years?
It's more that I started as a young girl and developed over the years. I have a degree in art, but very little of what I learned in college has to do with what I'm doing today. I've studied with artists across the US and or across the world for a couple of the artists, and I continue to learn. I continue to reinvent myself. I started out as a realist, and now I'm a contemporary abstract painter. I can do all different kinds of art, but at this point, I'm focused in on abstracts, contemporary work, large work, that kind of thing.
How do you determine, you know, you meant in going over some of your notes, you worked in I think in oils for like most of your career, and then
Yeah.
all of a sudden you branched into something, and I don't, is it called encaustics?
Yes,
The
encaustics.
word I saw was encaustics. And what it, how what is it, how is that different from traditional oil paint?
Encaustics, it's oil paint and wax mixed together, and it's a very old technique. And you use a heat source like a blowtorch to melt the paint, and you paint with a brush that has molten wax on it onto a surface. And actually, it started out the Egyptians painted mummy faces with encaustics, and they sealed ships with encaustic paint. So, it's very durable, lasts forever. I don't do it anymore. I spent a ton of time explaining to people that their painting would not melt. They were always afraid because it was wax that it would melt. But I love doing it, but it's a hybrid really of oil paint and at some point I just moved on. I painted in oils for quite a few years and was quite a snob about it. I thought oils were everything. But acrylics these days are as good as any oil. I can't tell the difference in a painting I've done in oil and the painting I've done in acrylic unless it has mixed media. I do a lot of mixed media, which you can't really do with oil. Oil paint does not play well with other mixed mediums where acrylic just loves it. So I can add pastel, I can add charcoal, I can add graphite, I can add collage, I can add all different kinds of things and create a beautiful surface. And that's what I'm looking for.
Is the technique that you use to paint a little bit different technique when you're using acrylics or when you're using oils, or is the painting method exactly the same?
I find it pretty much the same. Everybody complains about how slow oil dries and how fast acrylic dries. But, you know, I still use brushes. With acrylic, I use anything but a brush sometimes. I can use sponges. I can use the ends of a pencil. I can use as a scraper. I can use a something that looks like a cake decorator, a wedge type thing. I use all different kinds of tools besides a brush. And I do that to take my hand out of it, to get different marks, to create a surface that is interesting. And you don't do that as much with oil. You can do it, but it's oil is much more painted with brushes for the most part.
I want to try and get inside your head now, because, you know, do you, you know, and by the way, folks, this young lady paints every day, and she's been painting for several years, even though you're such a youngster. but you have been painting, and you paint every day. So just like people get up and go to work every day, 5 days a week and all, do you find that you wake up sometimes and you say, I am really inspired, and you just go from sunup to sundown, and other days you get up and you say, I just don't have the urge today? Or even when you don't have the urge, you find the time to do at least a little bit of something?
I do. I don't lack for inspiration. I have tons of ideas. I can't wait to paint. So my husband laughs because my favorite day of the week is Monday because I get to go to the studio. I love being in my studio. I have a large studio in a building with 200 artists, and we're open once a month to the public. But I can't wait to paint. So if there are days where I wake up and I don't feel like painting, which isn't very often, I always have a ton of computer work to do. Keep my website up to date, you know, answer emails. I have work on other people's website, like Saatchi and different art venues. And there's just always something to do, to update or something else. So sometimes I'll spend a couple hours doing computer work, and while I'm looking at a painting across the room, and I'm making decisions in my head on what I want to do next to that painting. So, and it's not unusual for me to turn them upside down and look at them and keep turning them and keep thinking about what I'm seeing until I come up with decisions on what I want to do next.
You mentioned that your studio is located in, it's a historic location, I believe. And you said there's like 200 artists. How far away from home is this?
It's about 10 minutes. It's two exits down the highway. It's very close.
Okay, I was gonna say, because being in Cincinnati, Ohio, I know that you can get some pretty brutal winters and all. And to say I go to the studio and I paint every day, I mean, we're talking about the change of seasons also to go to the studio. Now, in a collaborative effort like that with 200 other artists, do you often interact with some of the other artists to get maybe ideas, suggestions? You share information. You obviously must share clients, because people that come into that building and all will look at everyone's work. Do you find it's kind of a sorority fraternity you have there?
It's an interesting mix. I would say this whole building, probably only 20 to 30% work every day or work in their studio. A lot of people have other jobs and just open for what we call Final Friday or gallery walk. But I get tons of inspiration from this building. There's great artists in here. There's also artists that are just starting out. So there's just all kinds of different artists, but I have certain people that are my go-tos to bounce ideas off of. But it's a wonderful setting to be in. It's very inspiring just walking in the door and being in this building.
I lived in South Florida for a number of years, and there are several of those kind of artist co-op areas in various areas around Coral Gables and all, where, you know, the artists, you just walk from studio to studio, and one is working in sculpting and one is working in clay and one is working in oils, and it's fascinating, almost like going to a museum, and that atmosphere. So I'm sure that when people come in at any time and they find an artist like yourself who's there almost every day, and all, that's a plus for you and also for the people that are visiting.
Yes. I often paint on Final Friday too. I find it hard to just sit there for 4 hours. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of the people that walk in my studio are afraid to talk to the artists. They're afraid they might have to buy something. So if I'm painting, they can walk around and look without feeling intimidated by me staring at them. So it's a great event. We usually have a food truck outside, and inside we have music outside. We're 8 stories, so we have an elevator operator that takes people to the 8th floor, and then they walk down. And every floor is totally different. Every studio is totally different. So it's a great experience. And people, we've been here 30-some years. I've been in the building like 22. And people will walk in who've lived in Cincinnati their whole life and just found out about us. So it's a free event. So it's just really a great evening.
Well, and some of the information about that, if you are the folks that are watching and listening, if you find yourself in Cincinnati, stop by and see this historic building in the gallery. And again, the website is carolmcconnell.com. I invite you to visit it. You do have a fascinating a website, because not only do you have a little bit of information about the things that you're doing, but also you have samples of your artwork, and folks, you can purchase art. Right there is a little button that says let's shop. And I'll tell you, And it's interesting. For instance, I noticed the tote bag right there on page one. You do handbags, you do tank tops, and all, where your artwork is featured on some of that. Stop right there a moment, Christine, because I want Carol to explain a little bit about that little ballerina piece, because the company Class. Yes. when you look at it on the screen, it looks like little dots or something on the leg, but that is made up of multiple ballerinas, and I think you told me that no two of them are the same.
That's right. This original piece was quite huge. It's 72 inches by 72 inches, but each individual leg is 36 by 72. And each little figure on there is about 6 inches. They're about like this. And each pose is different. No pose is repeated. It's the Cincinnati Ballet. And it is one of my favorite pieces, and it's sold to two lawyers here in town, two young lawyers that were just about to get married. and they were building their house, and they built a specific place to put this painting in their house. Now, what you're seeing here is a Jaclay print, which is much, much smaller, because the original, like I said, was, what is that, 6 feet by 6 feet. So it was very large.
Right, right. Now, you used a word that I want you to expound upon a little bit, and that Jaclay. Is a Jaclay.
Yes.
And all, and I want you to explain, because some people may you know that are going through your website. Yes, there are pieces that she does that are in 4 and 5 figures for originals and all. But explain, what is a Jaclay?
A Jaclay, that's a French word, and it basically means that it's one of a kind print. Then they're printed one at a time, not one at a kind. And they're printed one at a time. They can be enhanced by the artist, signed by the artist, but they are a print of the original. I usually just do them when the original is sold, and I never do them the same size as the original. But I have a company here in town that prints beautiful archival inks, and they're just beautiful Jaclays. So, and I guess a Jaclay is different from a lithograph in that a lithograph, you have to print probably minimum 50 to 100 or of the same image, where a Jaclay, you can just print one, or you can print a series of 10. But I can do them on demand according to the orders I get. And then they can be printed on watercolor paper, or they can be printed on canvas and stretched just like a painting is.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you mentioned, that it can be done on canvas. So you have a Jaclay of the original that almost has the same texture to it because it is on canvas. And that allows someone who, you know, does not invest 4 or 5 figures in an original in order to become a collector of someone's artwork, because you can get the Jaclay and have a beautiful, beautiful piece that is at a much more affordable price.
That's right. That's right.
You know, that ballerina piece is fascinating. And as you say, to look at it up close, you realize that it is made up, not just the paint, but is individual ballerinas. You mentioned the Cincinnati Ballet, but what was the inspiration that you had for doing it and doing it that way?
The Cincinnati Ballet, I don't know if they're still doing this, but they allow photographers and artists to come in and photograph their morning class. Excuse me. So I went in and I shot over 2,000 photos of ballerinas practicing. One thing I did learn is they don't look as cute in their morning class as they do when they're actually performing. They have leg warmers and big sweaters and, you know. So I was asked, they allowed me to stay while they were practicing for the Nutcracker, and that was more finished look for the ballerina with tutus and all of that. But I had 2,000 photos, and I wanted to paint different ballerina paintings. For a while I was known for just doing ballerinas. I did so many of them. But this was a way to use a ton of poses from these 2,000 and create a very large show-stopping kind of piece.
Yeah. As you said, the original is 6 foot by 6 foot, 2 3 by 6 foot panels.
Yes.
And was there a reason that you decided that I'm going to strictly do this in black and white?
Actually, it's in blues and creams, but I'm not sure when I made that decision to do that. The background has a lot of different colors in it, but I did keep it simple so that the images would pop off and you wouldn't get lost in figuring out what colors there were. So
yeah. It's a fascinating piece, and as you go page by page of your work, there aren't an awful lot that you do in simple black and white, because you are really an artist who loves an explosion of color.
Thank you.
And your abstracts can be bright, an explosion of bright colors, or they're soft pastels and all. But I have always, not being an artist myself, I tried, but I'm maybe one notch above stick figures. But just to get inside your head again for a moment is when you have that blank canvas in front of you, you walk into the studio with a preconceived idea of what you are going to paint, or you just start putting paint on the canvas and all of a sudden your wrist just goes almost automatically and it starts to create something, and then you expand on that theme.
Well, when I have a large white canvas, I activate what I call activate the canvas. And I take a water soluble graphite and I just draw all over it. And then I seal all that. And probably less than 5% of that might make it into the final painting. Then I start with paint and just paint strokes just to get the canvas activated, to get something to work with. But I never like painted all one color. It would be lots of colors to start. And then I start pushing and pulling, putting other colors next to it, other shapes, different textures, different line work. And I start building the surface so that I have layers. When you see my paintings in person, they have lots of energy and lots of layering. From far away, you don't notice the layering. And when you get up close, you can see that there's things on top of things. And it creates a very beautiful surface. So I never just start with a blank canvas and like do a line drawing and fill that line drawing in. Even when I was a realist, I would work from dark to light, putting in all the darks. And having the painting emerge out of the background instead of filling in like paint by number. So.
There's a question that I have often discussed with friends and other art lovers, and I want you to address it, and that is, how does Carol know when that painting is finished?
Well, sometimes. I don't know that it's finished, but I don't have something else I want to do until I don't see anything I want to change, anything that's bothering me. And when I get done painting for the day, I always take a photo on my iPhone and look at it at night and turn it into a black and white to see the values. And but it's often that I will have a painting sitting in my studio and I'll be working on something else, and that'll catch my eye, and I'll think of something I want to do. So sometimes they're never finished. Sometimes I just find a good place to stop. So sometimes you can lose the energy and all the spontaneity in a painting. You can beat it to death, you know. So if that's happening, the painting's probably never going to be successful, and really, you should just paint over it and start over. So.
I have a good friend who answered the question, how do you know when a painting is finished? He says, when it sells.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Yes.
When somebody says, I love that painting just the way it is, and it goes out of your studio, now you're finished with that painting
Right,
because it's
right.
theirs.
Exactly. That's a good answer.
Carol, we had a little discussion before we went on the air, because I found it fascinating that later in life you started losing your hearing, and you in fact have cochlear implants and all. Have
Two.
you found and this started several years ago, have you found that your loss of that sense has maybe upped other senses, a notch or two?
I I would say that I don't notice it that much because painting in a studio is kind of a lonely task to begin with. You're on your own. So what I do love about it is I can stream. I have Bluetooth in both of my implants, so I can stream documentaries and podcasts and all different things and listen to them in perfect sound right in my head, which I love. But I mostly notice it when I have to go to an opening or something and it's very noisy and sound is bouncing off everywhere. And it's very hard for me in those environments to hear people and to, you know, I can't wait to get there. I can't wait to leave because it's uncomfortable trying that hard to hear people.
It's interesting. Again, folks, you need to visit the website and all. It is just an absolute explosion of color. CarolMcConnell.com. There is a specific piece that on your website that I fell in love with. And it's because as a young man, I started visiting the Art Institute in Chicago. And there is a painting on the wall in the Art Institute, by, painted by Seurat. It's A Day in the Park. And I'm going through and all of a sudden this pops up as an inspirational piece that you did of people looking at that Seurat painting, which is probably one of the most famous and most visited pieces in the Chicago Art Institute. And I want you to explain a little bit about your inspiration for painting a painting about people looking at a painting.
Well, I happened to be in Chicago at the Art Institute on a Friday afternoon, and I walked in the room that had the Seurat, and I saw these four. I didn't place them there. They were just seated there. And it was a husband and a wife and a father and a son. And what I loved about it is she has on the red top. He has the bald head. The son has the slouch, and the father has the hat and the camera. So I couldn't have posed them more perfectly. I was surprised how long it took me to paint the Seurat. That took forever to paint that. But the four of them were watching it like it was TV, and it was just fascinating. And I took that photograph and created this afterwards. And of course, this sold many years ago, but I still have Jaclay prints of it. And it is one of my favorite paintings I ever did. And, you know, you once in a while, and I still, for years after I painted it, I would have people walk in my studio and ask me about it. It was, you know, it was just really a showstopper. And when you paint one like that, you know, you've hit a home run. So.
And the original is a very, very large piece on the wall at the Art Institute. Now, in this case, did you paint the Seurat painting on the canvas first and then the people overlaid on it? Or did you do the people first and then do the painting behind them?
In that one, I actually did the Seurat first. It was because it's like its own painting within a painting. I created that first and then I did the people in the background. And then, you know, you go back in and work on the Seurat, so it all fits together. But I actually did the Seurat first, which, you know, it has so much going on in it. It's hard to believe. So, it was really, really a fun piece to do. And I don't know those people. They had no idea I took the photograph, but I thank them all for sitting down and watching that Seurat.
But it's a fascinating piece. I love it, and I have a feeling that your Jaclay print might find a place on a wall in my home one of these days. Yeah, I want to touch again on something that we mentioned earlier in our conversation, and that was working with interior designers and people that commission. Is the process fairly easy to work with interior designers and all, or do you find that very often there are stumbling blocks in the process to go from the original idea to the completion?
Oh, there can be stumbling blocks, but if as long as I have a clear idea what they want in the beginning and they supply me with color swatches, either pillows, pillows or paint samples or whatever they have for me to work from, there's always an approval process. And I don't like to show paintings until they're done because people can't imagine halfway through that this painting's going to work. Paintings go through an ugly stage, and that's not what I want to show the client. So I really want to finish it and then, or 95%, and then get their comments and make changes at that point. And because I'm going through layers of people, I don't actually know the client. I work with the interior designer who works with the client. So
You're
there's
working
a
with the middleman.
That's right. So I, you know, they have to take my image and show it to them and get their comments. So sometimes there's a waiting game. And with commissions, I get 50% down and 50% when they love it. But the interior designer pays that last 50% when she gets paid. So there can be a lag in being paid as well. But all in all, I enjoy doing it because it's quite a challenge to, you know, to work with constraints instead of just saying, today I'm going to paint whatever I want. I have to say, okay, they want 40% warm colors, 40%, you know, there's all these different variables, which makes it like a puzzle, makes it kind of fun.
Well, and I brought that up because we talked earlier about how you just walk into a blank canvas and you start to create. Well, when you're working with a client and all, you are creating out of their head, not out of yours. So you've got to work to try and get the inspiration that they had for to do the piece. There is something in the information that I read about you that kind of intrigued me. And you said that there are days that sometimes you feel like an imposter, and you even call it an imposter syndrome. Explain what an imposter syndrome is.
Well, I think most artists have those days where they just think they can't paint at all. They think, oh, I'm just faking this. I'm not a real artist. And it just doubt creeps in. And social media doesn't help that any. When I go on social media on Instagram and look at all the beautiful paintings out there, I think, oh, you know, mine are not as good as so and so. And really, that's a horrible thing to do, to compare yourself, because then I'll have people walk in who love my work or tell me they bought a piece and it's the favorite piece they own. And all of that wipes away the imposter syndrome. But there are days when I think I forgot how to paint. I don't know how to paint. In those days, you just paint, you push through it. You don't let that stay there. You know, you shut off the social media and get to work.
I mean, folks, when you're working with a young lady who has been painting every day for more than 20 years, do the math. That's a lot of days. And obviously there are days that maybe you're not feeling 100%, or you just have a little, you just don't have that total inspiration. It's your ability and your knowledge and your creativity and your passion that kind of pushes through that and says, I can do a little bit. And do you find that sometimes when you have those days that you say, well, I'm just going to paint for a half an hour or whatever, that you start and all of a sudden that half an hour is an hour and 2 hours, and then you're all day in front of that canvas?
I call that flow. When I get in the flow where it's just magical, you can't you can't stop because it's just going so well. You don't want to disrupt the genius that's happening. So yes, I love that. That is my favorite, where I look up and, oh, I'm late. I should have left a half hour ago or whatever. But I mean, when you can get into flow, you can create beautiful things. It's just, you know, it's not something you can say, okay, today I'm going to paint and I'm going to be in a flow state. You've got to, you know, it just happens while you're painting. So.
Well, folks, I invite you to get into the flow by visiting the website. And if you are ever in Cincinnati, you need to stop by this historic building and see not only Carol, but some of the other various artists that are there. You do absolutely fascinating work. And again, you're just a little tiny lady and you've got a step stool to get into some of these 6-foot pieces that you're working on, but it's a talent and it's a passion that I think very few people have and can be developed. And folks, if you are an aspiring artist, or, you know, you just maybe say it's something that when I retire, I want to start doing, feel free to reach out and email Carol and ask for information or suggestions as to what to do. You're a lovely young lady. I very, very much appreciate you taking the time to share your artwork, your passion, your life, your career with my audience.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. You've asked questions I've never been asked before, so it's been very fascinating to chat with you.
Well, that'll do it for another episode of Someone You Should Know. I always end my show by saying, be yourself, because everyone else is already taken. So go out, make it a great day. And again, a big thank you to my guest, Carol McConnell. Thank you.
Thank you.
Someone you should know.